Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy, knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the MLB Pipeline podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo. We have two big things that we want to talk about this week. Those, of course, being the Major League Baseball draft and the All-Star Futures game. We're going to dig into both of those, and we have a representative from this year's Futures game who Jonathan had a chance to talk to recently, Pirates pitching prospect Mike Burrows. He will join us on the podcast, and we'll wrap up as we always do by answering a question from the mailbag. All right, this is the craziest week of our year. We learned that last year when the Futures game and draft were held on the same day. This year, I don't know, what do you guys call this, a bit of a reprieve? The Futures game is now on Saturday instead of the exact same day as the first day of the draft. A little bit of a reprieve? Or...
I feel like you're poking the bear here, Jason. I actually think this is worse.
Alex, mute Jim.
I think this is worse just from my...
Really worse.
Well, because from my own selfish perspective, I feel like the thing we work the hardest on all year that gets the most visibility is trying to project who's going where in the first round. And during a time where I don't know what you'll be doing during the game, Jonathan, exactly. I know I will be broadcasting, so I don't think I'll be calling or texting teams and agents to try to get some sense of where players are falling in the draft. So if I had to vote, which if I had a vote and I don't, I would rather have it just be on the same day, where last year it was, I know, Jonathan, you broadcast the game and it was a shame I didn't go. But I was just like, I can't do both in the same day. But like, I feel this year is worse from a personal standpoint, for me at least.
Yeah. I think if you had to do the double duty, maybe you would think slightly differently.
You didn't have to do the double duty, though. You chose to do the double duty.
Okay. This is an offline conversation, I think. I don't think we need to use up podcast time for this, but... At any rate, it was a lot. And it is, I think in general, it's a shame like that we can't personally focus on each thing as much as we would like to. I do think this is moderately better. I do like the fact that when the draft is on this year, it will be standing alone. There won't be any games going on. So I think that part is good. I don't mind that it's separated by days. Yes, we can't put as much time into that final mock draft that we normally would, but it is what it is, as they say.
Yeah, and I mean, as far as the fans go, I think separating the Futures game from the draft is nice to be able to, have both of those things on two separate days. All right, let's talk. Let's kind of go reverse chronological here, as Futures game is on Saturday, draft starts on Sunday, and actually we'll get busy even before that with the high school All-American game, which is on Friday. That will be streamed live on MLB.com. Jonathan on the call in that game, and Jonathan, you've seen quite a few of these guys. These will be 2023 top high school draft prospects from the 2023 class. And we got a taste of this over the past couple of years. And it's a really nice sneak preview. Like, the guys that we're seeing in this year's game will then be seeing at the draft in the following year.
Yeah. I mean, no doubt. It's last year's game had Drew Jones, Tamar Johnson, Elijah Green, who we've spent a lot of time talking about in the run-up. Not to mention Cole Young, bunch of the high school bats that we've been spending a lot of time on who are likely first rounders were all in that game last year. And it's fun just watching them, you know, as part of the All-Star Week. I really like this addition to the festivities, you know, even if it adds, you know, something else to our plate. I enjoy that. And I've even, you know, I'm a little bit jaded about home run derbies at this point in time, but I enjoy the high school home run derby. You know, the format was good. It's kind of nice and quick, Jim. You'll see. I know you're doing the broadcast for that. But just seeing what they can do in a big league stadium, albeit with metal bats, is a whole lot of fun.
Yeah. So the high school home run derby will take place on Saturday prior to the Futures game. Futures game on Saturday night, 7 Eastern. That game is on Peacock. And then the draft on Sunday, day one. Preview show on the MLB Network and MLB.com starts at 6 p.m. Eastern. Draft beginning at 7. First pick will occur somewhere around 15 minutes after 7. And then days 2 and 3 of the draft on Monday and Tuesday begin at 2 p.m. Eastern. And all of that can be seen on MLB.com. All right, so let's get into the draft here. Jonathan, you are on mock draft duty for this week. I think you've pretty well got your top 10 in place, but let's first focus on the number one pick. Let's look at this this way. Who is in the running to go number one? I don't have all of our mocks listed out here in front of me, but how many? Okay, how many different players have you guys had go number one in your mocks?
I want to say we have had 4.
Well,
we have had 4.
Okay, you said you have them right there. Okay, so four different ones. Now, are all 4 of those guys still in consideration?
Yes. There are 5 still, quote unquote, officially in consideration. The fifth is Elijah Green, whose name I have never heard really being in serious contention, but Jim, I don't want to speak for you ever, but in this case, I think like we haven't been told that he's been removed from that list of players that they're looking at.
No. I'm not 100% convinced, you know, like originally it was 6 players and then it was 5, like what, 4 to 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I've never been sure. Like, I think Elijah Green's the 5th guy. I'm not 100% convinced Elijah Green is the 5th guy. I would be, as talented as Elijah Green is, I just don't see the Orioles, not that they're tipping their hand, I don't see the Orioles taking Elijah Green. And I haven't spoken to anybody with another team who thinks that the Orioles would take Elijah Green. So I think that's fair.
Okay, so who are these 5 guys?
Well, I don't even want to say the favorite, but you know, Drew Jones is an obvious choice. He's the best player in the class. Jim and I are both fans of the team picking 1-1, taking the best guy in the class. If it's clear, that's who it is. And there is as good a chance as anybody else that Drew Jones would be the number one pick. I think for me, the next best, I'm sort of handicapping, you know, if the Orioles were going to go we're going to cut a deal like they did with college bats the last 2 years with Heston Kerstad and Colton Cowser, I think that player is Tamar Johnson. And I think there is a fairly decent chance that that could happen. And I know Jim has gone with Tamar Johnson in the number one spot in a previous mock, and that makes a lot of sense. Jim, would you say that that's – to me right now, Jones and Johnson are kind of – I feel have the around the same percentage of – they're the front runners, if for lack of a better word.
Yeah, if we were throwing percentages on these, and like, again, it's more just talking to a bunch of people like you have and – trying to read tea leaves rather than having direct intel, I kind of feel like it's Drew Jones, like 33%, Tamar Johnson, maybe 33%. I keep going back and forth on those two. I feel like maybe I'd go 30% Jackson Holiday, who kind of won't, you know, he's got more all-around tools and he plays a more premium position than Termar, but he won't cost as much as Drew Jones. So I'd go 30% on him. And what's that leave me, like 4%? I guess the other 4% I would go to Brooks Lee. I don't think it's Brooks Lee, because Brooks Lee has a similar profile to me as Termar Johnson. And while Brooks Lee's been on the podcast, we love Brooks Lee, so is Termar. We love Termar. I just think if you're going to go that route, even though Brooks Lee has proven himself at a higher level, you're going to save more money with Termar Johnson.
Agreed.
And I just think he and Brooks Lee are close enough that I would I think you might save a significant more amount of money with Termar Johnson than Brooks Lee. So that's why I just don't buy completely. I think Brooks Lee's in the discussion, but I would be very, very surprised. Like, to me, he's a distant fourth guy.
No, I agree with all of that. And I think, you know, they're keeping everybody on the table. They're going to wait till Sunday, you know, which they can use to sort of, as they go back and forth between the representatives of all these players. If I had to right now, I think it's Drew Jones or Termar Johnson. And this is not based on any direct information, but that is my gut feel at the moment. And that doesn't mean that Jackson Holiday could jump in. It doesn't mean that they could decide to turn to Brooks Lee if the other, you know, if they are talking to Termar Johnson people and they're not getting enough of a discount, you know, whatever. We don't know what's going on in those conversations at all, but that's my gut feel right now is it's one of those two guys.
I kind of feel the same way, even though I had the odds close. I feel like they're either going to take the very best guy and pay negotiate whatever the price is, or take the guy who's probably the least expensive option in Termar Johnson rather than compromise and go for Jackson Holiday.
So, Jim, you said that Johnson and Lee are similar profiles, but you save more money. You think you'd save more money with Johnson.
Does
Johnson also have the higher ceiling of the two?
I don't know if I'd say that.
I don't think so.
I mean, you could argue it, but I think you could also argue that Brooks Lee has a chance to stay at short. It may not be super high. I don't think anybody really projects Termar to stay at short. I think you could project, based on, you know, what you've seen and what they've accomplished, that Brooks Lee might have more power. So I think you could argue that basically whichever way you could argue in support of either player having the higher ceiling, depending on how bullish you were on them.
And I think not that this comes into it that much, but in terms of, you know, Brooks Lee, I don't think is going to take very long to be big league ready. Now, Termar Johnson is such a good hitter. He may be one of those young hitters that moves relatively quickly also. But, you know, the Orioles are at a stage now where they're starting to pool talent at the upper levels and some of them are getting to the big leagues. You can make either argument, you know, take Brooks Lee. He's going to join that group really quickly as things are starting to turn around in Baltimore. Or you take, and you can make this argument for, you know, for Drew Jones, the high school guy, and let him develop at whatever rate he needs to, because you've got some of this talent at the upper levels. You know, I mean, that ends up maybe being a wash when all is said and done. And I think also Jones and Johnson have pretty high floors for high school guys. Like, you know, they're pretty polished players. So I think, you know, it'd be interesting to see, you know, it'll be interesting to see once whoever takes them when they're in the pro game, if they're the kind of high school players that can get to the big leagues faster than most people think high school bats can.
Okay, let's do this. Let's assume that each of these players that are in the running goes number one, and let's talk about what happens after, if that happens. Let's start with the most likely scenario in both of your estimations, with Drew Jones going first. Does that mean that doesn't necessarily mean that the guy, the other favorite in your estimation to go number one, is going to go number two, right?
Correct.
Correct.
I had to figure out what you were saying there, but yes.
Untangle that.
Yes. That is correct. And I think we've kind of both mocked this over the last few weeks. If Drew Jones goes one, I think the Diamondbacks take Jackson Holliday two.
That's my best guess as well.
Yeah, and none of your drafts have you had Drew Jones going number one and Tamar going number two.
I don't think that's like 100% out of the question. And I think, Jim, you mentioned this in your last week's mock.
I did. I mean, the thing that's going to be interesting with Tamar is I think his price tag is going to be significantly lower than a Drew Jones and a Jackson Holliday and maybe even a couple of the college guys. And that's going to be tempting at some point to where maybe even if you have a guy slightly ahead of him, and I'm just making up numbers here, I don't have everybody's asking price. If Tamar Johnson is going to cost me $1.5 million less, maybe more than that, that makes him really attractive when you start looking at bonus pool machinations.
Right. That said, you know, and I'm kind of, and the Diamondbacks do have an extra pick. So if they wanted to do that, they could. And maybe it's kind of basing it on last year when they took Jordan Lawler. Like, I get the sense that they will take who they think is the best player, which is why we've kind of gone Jackson Holliday the last couple of mocks if Drew Jones goes 1-1.
Okay, so if we go Jones, Holliday, Rangers picking at three, Jim, if this were the scenario, who do you think the Rangers would take here?
I would go Brooks Lee, but I think it's pretty close between Brooks Lee and Kevin Parada and Elijah Green. Like I think it could go any of those three directions.
I agree with that.
And Kevin Parada is the Georgia Tech catcher. I don't think we've mentioned him yet.
Yeah, you know, so I think that those are the three names, and we've had those three names in the spot kind of throughout. Especially if those go one and if Jones and Holliday are one and two, I do think it's going to be one of those three guys. I'm leaning towards one of the college bats, leaning towards Kevin Parada right now, without any real serious intel.
Okay, and that would bring us to the Pirates at four. Who do you like there, Jim?
I keep getting increased chatter that they're going to look to do a deal there. So I would give them Tamar Johnson in this scenario. I think the two guys most likely to cut a deal that would save you a decent amount of money, and the Pirates went that route last year with Henry Davis at one, it would be Tamar Johnson or Chipola Junior College third baseman Cam Collier. So I would go Tamar Johnson in this scenario.
I agree with that, and I agree with, you know, I had Cam Collier in my mock now, you know, almost 2 weeks ago. I think that's a possibility. I like Brooks Lee in that spot because he kind of fits what they've done, you know, in terms of the college bats the last few years. But for the reasons Jim laid out, I think it's Johnson and Collier with a slight lead to Johnson as of right now.
Okay, so that's Jones, Holliday, Parada or Lee, maybe Green. At three to the Rangers, Tamar Johnson, maybe Cam Collier at four to the Pirates, and then that brings us to the Nationals at five. I know there are a couple different sort of slight variations in the first four picks there, but based on what you guys have said to this point, who would you have the Nationals taking here?
Well, I think it's, you know, some of the same names. You know, I think right now, and Jim, I think we are in agreement that there's a good chance that it would be Elijah Green over the college bats. I think Brooks Lee would be in the mix in this scenario. So I think it's probably Lee or Elijah Green in this setup.
Yeah, and it depends. You know, I know they like Kevin Parada a lot too. If Kevin Parada is available, let's say he doesn't go three, I think he's in that mix also. But they're basically, I mean, this is true at the top of the draft. All the guys we're talking about, I haven't heard any Cam Collier there, but all the other guys we've talked about is possibly going in the first four picks. I think they're just sorting through whoever's left over.
Okay. Now, I don't think we'll go through each permutation here, but
We could do them really quicker. We'd probably pick up the pace on these.
Well, let's do the second most likely scenario that you discussed with Tamar going number one. How does that affect the remaining top five picks?
Well, I feel like the biggest lock, and again, Jonathan, not speaking for you, but I'm betting you will agree with me. DraftKings has this as a negative 420 that you will agree with me.
Jonathan will agree.
The biggest lie, you have to bet $100. You have to bet 420 to win $100, Jonathan.
$25,000.
Yes. So anyway, if we say that Tamar Johnson goes number one, I think the Diamondbacks, as much of a lock as we've heard, would take Drew Jones at number two.
Yes. 100%.
Like, that one's easy. Like, so if we hear from the Orioles Saturday night or Sunday morning that they're taking anybody but Drew Jones at one, we will both be projecting Drew Jones at two.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. In the 10 mocks that you guys have done dating back to April, you've yet to do one with Drew Jones falling beyond number two. So that's in line with that.
And I'll bet all 10 of them say some form of, if he doesn't go one, he's locked to go two.
Okay.
I think we've been saying that for 10 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we're still then in kind of the same position with the Rangers, I guess, because you'd said one of the college bats.
Well, no, I think they would take Jackson Holliday if he's there. I think if the Diamondbacks don't take Jackson Holliday, there's a strong chance the Rangers take Jackson Holliday at three.
Yes.
Okay.
You'd have the Pirates taking a deal again. I still think that's Johnson, Collier. You know, maybe they do go for the lead, but like, taking a deal. And then the Nationals, again, you would have the Parada versus Parada, Lee, and Elijah Green battling at five.
No, I agree with that. And if you look over the course of our mocks, we've been pretty consistent that if one and two is anything but Jones and Holiday, the Rangers would take Holiday at three.
Okay. And so, Jim, when you put percentages on these, you had 33%.
Well, I don't know how accurate they were. I was just throwing those out. But yeah, right, I went 33, 33, 34.
We're banking it on, you better be accurate.
No, but going down the line here, you had 33% on Tamar, 33% on Drew Jones. And then was there?
Yeah, well, Jackson Holliday, I went 30. I don't feel like Jackson Holliday is too distant behind Drew Jones and Tamar Johnson. I think I would agree with Jonathan said earlier. I feel like it's going to be one of those two, but I feel like Jackson Holliday is a close third. So let's do, if Jackson Holliday goes one, Jonathan, we know Drew Jones is going to. We feel that in our bones. So if Holliday goes one and Jones goes two, who do the Rangers take at three?
I then feel it would probably be one of those college hitters, so Lee or Parada.
Yeah, it goes back to what we were talking about with the first scenario where I think we had Jones going one, Holliday two. It's just flipped them. So it's Lee, Parada, you know, maybe Green. Elijah Green. And then I think the rest of the draft unfolds like we did Jones one, Holliday two. You've got the Pirates likely taking a deal, maybe Brooks Lee at four, and then the college guys who are remaining versus Green at five. So if Holliday gets one, I think it just kind of flips what we thought the scenario would be with Jones going one.
Right. And I will say that if the Rangers take Lee at three, then that cements in a Pirates deal at four. I don't see any scenario where they take Kevin Parada.
I agree. It'd be kind of tough after you took Henry Davis last year.
I would think so, you know, and I haven't heard that at all. That's one of those that if we find out, not that we're going to, but we feel some certainty that the top three are some combination of Jones, Holliday, Lee, then I think the Pirates will certainly take Tamar Johnson or Cam Collier.
Okay, and next on your guaranteed percentages, Jim, was
Brooks Lee is the long shot. Yeah. If Brooks Lee goes one, then you have the Diamondbacks, they get Drew Jones, and the Rangers get Jackson Holliday, like we discussed before. We feel pretty strong about
those.
And
then the Pirates cut a deal.
And then the Pirates cut the deal again, and then the Nationals are looking at Parada versus Green. So I guess what we're saying, having talked this through, Jonathan, we don't see the top five picks. We think it's going to be some combination of Drew Jones, Jackson Holliday, Termar Johnson, Elijah Green, Brooks Lee, Kevin Parada, and Cam Collier. I think we've said it sounds like those are the only seven guys right now that we feel are going to possibly go in the top five picks.
Thanks for writing my lead for this week's mock.
There you go.
Okay. So we've talked pretty extensively here about the top five picks. Anything else that we need to talk about? Anybody on the move making a jump, names that you're hearing, anything of particular interest to you guys as you work the phones and talk to teams?
You know, for me, no. The teams that I've talked to so far as I've worked on this week's mock haven't even really lined up their boards yet. So there's still a little bit of a quiet period going on. There is not much now. I haven't gotten much beyond working on the sort of top part of the first round. So I've not heard anything out of the ordinary in terms of guys jumping up, or anything of that nature.
Well, I got the question for you because you'll get this as you talk to more teams. So you've got Cade Horton, College World Series hero. You've got Kumar Rocker, number 10 pick in last year's draft, whose medicals are out now that we've talked about. And you've got, Prelip out of Alabama, who was a potential number one overall pick before he had Tommy John, but he, Connor Prelip had a nice combine workout and showed that his stuff was back. So here's going to be my question. And you can weigh in too if you want, Jason. I will answer this also. Give me a 10 pick range of 10 picks where those three guys go in the draft. So let's start. Who do you think is going first of those three guys in the draft, Jonathan? Or who has the potential to go the highest?
As of right this minute, I'm going to say Connor Prelip.
I'll agree with that. So what's your 10 pick range on Connor Prelip?
15 to 25. No, you know what? 13 to 22. That's 10 picks.
Right. Well, I wasn't going to be a stickler like we could have. Yeah. I will go 8 to 17.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'd like to go 8 to 20. Like, if we could stretch it, like, I'd go 8 to 20. But yeah, so anyway.
You set the parameters.
I know I did. I'm saying, like, it's like he's a little tough. Okay, now.
Jim doesn't just bend everyone else's rules. He bends his own rules.
No, I'm just saying consistent. I'd like to. I didn't bend them. I just said I would like to. Okay, so now who's going second? Kumar Rocker or Cade Horton?
As of this minute.
So wait a minute. I'm just going to give you a hard time here, Jonathan. You have minute-to-minute information. If I ask you 5 minutes from now, even though you're podcasting with us, you'll have new intel.
I'm texting
5 minutes from now.
People on the fly, like live texting. Like,
yes.
What do you think?
At this exact minute, hold on. I'm going to, so people can calibrate their mock tracking. It is 12:11 p.m. Eastern on July 12th. As of this exact moment, who's going first, Rocker or Horton?
And I'm like tap dancing, waiting for responses. I'm going to say Horton.
Yeah, I think I'll say that too. But what range do you have him going in?
I'm going to say 17 to 26.
Kind of like that. I'm going to go.
You can stay the same range. It's fine.
Yeah, it's because you know what? I feel like the Angels at 13 are probably more likely to cut a deal rather than pay full slot. And I do think there's a chance that Cade Horton, his asking price could scare people a little bit. I'll go 17 to 26 also. That's an excellent call, Jonathan.
But I could see that, by the way. I mean, I think the Angels is that spot where we're looking to put a pitcher of some sort. And it's just a question of who that pitcher is. Okay?
Okay. Kumar Rocker. What's his 10 pick range? You groan.
I mean, I don't have a good feel. I'm going to say 25 to 35.
I like that one. Like, if you told me he went in the teens, if you told me he went in the sandwich round, I'm gonna go 24 to 33.
Mm-hmm.
But with that, I feel I don't have high confidence in that one.
No, I mean, there's a chance like I could not have him in this week's mock. I don't have a good feel for that yet. But he continues to be the biggest enigma.
All right, guys, let's take a break, come back, talk more draft. Let's talk about some of the top tools in this year's draft class. We'll do that coming up next on the MLB Pipeline Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo. Draft begins on Tuesday. And we just talked about the top of the order, what could happen in the top five picks. And now we want to focus on some individuals, some of the top tools in this year's draft class. Let's start with some hitters. The single best power prospect in this year's draft is...
Well, I wrote the story. Are you testing Jonathan, or do you want me to just...
I literally have it up in front of me, so it's not really a fair test.
You can't play along at home. You go 6-for-6. You would ace the test. It's Elijah Green. People have been talking to his power going back to... it was like the showcase circuit during the pandemic year when guys were kind of hoping he might reclassify into the 2021 draft. But he's 6'3", 225. He's strong. He's got bat speed. He's got loft. He's got a lot of leverage. I think it's at least 70 raw power. And, you know, I do think he hits balls about as hard and far as about anyone in this draft, even though he's only 18 years old. He's a lot younger than the college guys. And, you know, I do think, Jonathan, we've said this a bunch of times, he's got the best all-around tools in the draft, and I do think it's encouraging he did a better job of making contact. I mean, there are some swing and miss issues, but he did a better job this spring, and I think people do feel better about the bat than they did maybe at the end of last summer.
Yeah, and swing and miss is allowed now. I think when it becomes a concern is, will he get to that power that you're talking about? And I think there is more confidence that he will.
And this is usable power, not raw power.
Correct.
And this is now power or future power? You said 70.
I talk about raw power, but it's not like you project. I think what your grade, if it was 60 or 65, Jonathan, because I don't have it in front of me, for his future usable power. But like, I'm not saying that, like, we're not saying he would have plus power if he stepped into the big leagues today as an 18-year-old. Future plus power. And if you feel better about his bat, you can make that a 65.
Okay. Also in the discussion, Melendez, Parada, Barry, all college hitters. Okay. Best pure hitter in this year's draft class. We've talked about this one quite a few times. I don't think this will be a surprise to many people who have been listening to the podcast or following this year's draft class.
Yeah, I think since last December when we first did our top 100, we've talked about Termon Johnson being the best high school hitter in decades. He's the best pure hitter in this draft. He's got the swing. He's got the hand-eye coordination. He makes good decisions at the plate. He's playing not a top tier, but a second tier college wood bat league right now as a high school kid and hitting, I think, 277 when I checked this morning. It's hard to find a better high school hitter than this one. I struggle. I can't even say he's the best high school hitter since X because I'm not sure who X would be.
They had me thinking and realizing that my institutional memory is terrible, so I'm not going to come up with the name either. But I can't remember a pure high school, pure high school bat like this.
Maybe one. Griffey. Like, I mean, we're talking a long time. Yeah. So.
All right, fastest runner.
We saw Jarrett Curtis at the combine. I'm not the expert on 30-yard dash times, but he had the two fastest times at 3.55 and 3.56 seconds. He's a legit 80 runner. And what I like about him for a guy who can fly is he knows how to use it. He can steal bases. He plays a good center field. And he's not just a slappy guy at the plate. Like he's not going to be a slugger, but he can sting the ball on occasion. There's more than, hey, this guy's really fast, but we're not sure about the rest of the package. So he's pretty intriguing.
Yeah, I saw that combine, and like you, I don't really know what a 30-yard dash is exactly, but he looked pretty fast to me.
All right. Strongest arm.
You know, I don't know if this is cheating a little bit since Nolan McClain is a two-way guy, but we have him listed as a third baseman first, right-hander second. So I went Nolan McClain. You know, scouts are still split. They were split in high school. They're split now. Do you like him more as a slugging third baseman with a rocket arm, or do you like him as a right-handed pitcher who can get up to 98 miles an hour with a fastball and has power breaking pitches behind it? He was also a pretty good quarterback in high school and originally went to Oklahoma State with the idea of trying to play both sports. So I'd go Nolan McClain there. If, you know, it's always interesting. You know, if you look at the different positions, I think Adonis Guzman, the high school kid from Brunswick, Connecticut, is the best catching arm, and the best outfield arm may be Jordan Beck at Tennessee.
Yeah. So of the guys you have listed also in the discussion, along with McClain, we have another two-way player, Nazier Mullay, and then a couple of catchers in Guzman and Logan Tanner of Mississippi State. Best defender overall?
That's an easy one.
Yeah, we went through Jones. I mean, everybody says he reminds them of his dad, and his dad won 10 gold gloves. So I guess we're putting the over-under for Drew Jones. We'll go easy on him, put the over-under on gold gloves at 9.5. But he's, you know, not only does he have like his dad's speed and center field instincts, he's also got a strong arm. So it's just, it's a pretty ridiculous package. And oh, by the way, you know, you're talking about an advanced high school hitter with 30 home run potential too. And, you know, if you look at the other positions, I think Silas Ardoin from Texas is the top defensive catcher in the draft. And I would say that Jordan Sprinkle from UC Santa Barbara is the top defensive shortstop in the draft.
All right. You mentioned strong arm when talking about Drew Jones. Speaking of strong arms, let's move over to the mound and the best fastball in this class, I think, is another individual that people have heard plenty about.
Jim's favorite.
Yeah, well, no, I'm not anti-Ben Joyce. I just think the hype kind of outstrips exactly what he is as a prospect. But no, I mean, look, I mean, he hit 105.5 miles an hour with his fastball. I almost feel like it's more incredible. He averaged 101.3 this spring. And just because, you know, there's more to a fastball than velocity. And he has a low arm slot and a flat approach angle. So when he throws 101 and up in the strike zone, it's almost impossible to hit. And I will say one thing I thought was interesting, and it's just so reflective of this draft. If we're going to go through the four best pitches, each of these guys has had Tommy John surgery since October 2020. That's when Ben Joyce had his. But the best pitch of each guy belongs to two of the guys didn't even throw a competitive pitch this year.
I'm intrigued on that fastball list by Jacob Misurowski, and maybe it's just because, you know, he looked good at the combine and probably helped himself out there. But, you know, the junior college guys are always a little tougher to kind of pinpoint what to do with them. But his fastball, I think, is going to play just fine also.
Yeah, it's, you know, you're not allowed to be more intrigued by Jacob Misurowski than I am, because I had him on our list 2 years ago and I've been fascinated by him. But it's not just that he reaches triple digits. It's that he gets the carry he gets, and he's 6'7". He gets such great extension. It's like he's throwing 100, but I feel like it feels like it's 105 because he's releasing it from what feels like, you know, 10 feet in front of the plate. It's a really tough fastball.
Harness your intrigue, Jonathan.
Yes, sir.
No, he could be intrigued. I just am claiming superior intrigue to Jonathan.
We're going to have an intrigue off. All right. Breaking balls. We've got best curveball, best slider. Tell us who has them and tell us which one is the better of the two.
Okay. I would give the edge to Connor Prelip's slider. We talked about him in the where's he going to go exactly in the draft. You know, he only pitched, you know, two bullpen workouts for teams this year. At the combine, the slider was, I mean, it wasn't like he pitched six innings, but he in his bullpen workout, I was 85-87 with the slider. And he had the second highest breaking ball spin rate at 3,045 RPM on anybody's breaking pitch out there. And it just has nasty, nasty two-plane break. He can get up to 90 miles an hour. I would put that about a half grade ahead of Arkansas right-hander Peyton Pollett's curveball, which is usually ranges from 78 to 83, also has high spin rates and a ton of depth as well. He did not pitch at all. He hurt his elbow in May 2021, which is when Prelip was having Tommy John surgery. They tried to rehab it. That didn't work. Paulette was diagnosed with a torn ligament in January and had Tommy John. So neither one of those guys threw a pitch in a game this year.
You know, it's interesting looking at the other people in discussion. We don't have to go through them all, but all the other in the discussion for curveballs are high schoolers, and all the other sliders are college, or in the case of Kumar Rocker, you know, an indie league guy. It feels like there is a movement away from pure curveballs towards sliders. Is that, do you think that's why, Jim?
I do think that's true. I do think that, like, especially on the pro side, it feels like everybody really wants the sweepy slider with extreme horizontal break. And I think that's also an easier pitch to throw than a curveball. And so I think you see a lot of them. It's also just talking about the hurt pitchers. The other three sliders I mentioned were Kumar Rocker, shoulder surgery, Landon Sims, Tommy John surgery, Cade Horton, Tommy John surgery. I mean, I don't ever remember doing this best tools list with this many guys who've had surgeries. Like, one of the best fastballs we didn't mention was Cole Phillips, high school kid who threw 100. He had Tommy John surgery this spring too. So it's just insane at how many arm surgeries we're dealing with this year.
Best surgery.
Tommy John, at least most frequent surgery.
Best changeup, best control.
Best changeup, Dylan Lesko, who I think we both agreed, Jonathan, would have been the first pitcher taken.
Yes.
Except he had Tommy John surgery in April. He did pitch this year. You know, he's got a mid-90s fastball and a high-spin curve, but his changeup, guys put a plus-plus grade on it, you know, 70 on the 20-80 scale. It's low 80s, and it's got just a ton of movement. It seems like it breaks, like, sharp sideways and sinks as well. Like, it just it's very tough to hit. And then best control, Trey Dombrowski, who's a left-hander from Monmouth. He was a Cape Cod League Pitcher of the Year last year. He set a league record with a 45-2 strikeout to walk ratio. And then he came back and ranked sixth in Division I in that category this spring with a school record, 120 strikeouts versus just 14 walks. It's kind of fringy to average stuff, but it plays up because he locates it well. And Jonathan and Jason, you can play along. Danny Gentile not producing the show, so we can have as many quizzes as we want now. Who held the Monmouth strikeout record before Trey Dombrowski broke it this spring?
Oh, my God. Pat Light.
Very good. Very good, Jonathan. And you claimed you have no institutional memory.
Holy cow.
Very nice.
That is shocking that I remember that name. It's interesting. I can't remember, you know, and this is where the institutional memory fails me, but having a high schooler as having the best changeup in a draft class feels like an outlier to me. But maybe I'm wrong, because I feel like that's a pitch, you know, often high schoolers don't have to throw.
Right.
And so it's not as advanced. So I think Lesko is unusual in that regard. And I know.
Yeah, I think it just is a testament to how advanced he is. And
yeah,
I mean, not that, I mean, the changeup was why, but like, he's the only junior who's ever been the Gatorade National High School Player of the Year. You know, and like, I thought, like, Jonathan, like, I know he's my guy because he's in Georgia. You've obviously seen Lesko. Like, it was like he was a college pitcher pitching in high school.
His age
made him a high school pitcher.
Too. I mean, absolutely. All right, so I have a quiz.
Uh-oh.
Maybe to wrap this up. Do all of these top tool guys get taken in day one?
No, I'm going to say no.
You're going to say Jarrett Curtis doesn't go on day one?
Well, no, I think even, like, Jarrett Curtis, maybe. I don't think that's a consensus one. I don't think Nolan McClain goes in the top two rounds. I like Nolan McClain. He set an NCAA strikeout record as a hitter this year. He struck out 107 times. I think he's more of a third to fifth round guy if he's signable there. He's a second year eligible guy. I don't think Ben Joyce is a pure reliever who pitches every third or fourth day, goes in the top two rounds. And I do think Dombrowski, I could see Dombrowski sneaking into second round. I could see that one.
I think he goes in the second round. I know enough area scouts who really like him. Not that the area scouts make the decision in the second round, but I think he's one of those college arms who, you know, maybe he's more third round talent wise, but because of the command and his ability to, you know, use all of his pitches, and the fact that he's big and left handed certainly helps too. I think he definitely goes in the second round. But I think the guys that you pinpoint, Joyce could go. I could see someone deciding that they wanted that tool set for Ben Joyce to take him in round two, but by no means a guarantee.
All right. Well, let's take a break, shift gears, and talk futures game. We'll do that. We'll start off by talking to one of this year's pitchers on the National League side, Pirates pitching prospect Mike Burrows, coming up next on the MLB Pipeline Podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. We are going to shift gears now. We've been talking about the draft. Now we want to talk about the futures game and a player that will be pitching in Los Angeles for the National League side. Jonathan Mayo had a chance to talk to Mike Burrows recently, and we'll listen into that now.
All right, Mike, let's just start kind of with kind of getting accustomed to this level. Clearly so far, you seem to be adjusting just fine. You know, what have been the biggest things? I'm sure people told you, like, oh, that jump to double A can be tough, but so far so good for you.
Yeah, everybody said the jump is from A ball to double A. I think the biggest thing was just bringing a good mentality to every outing and having confidence and knowing that my stuff is going to play regardless of the level.
I would imagine, like, the jump from Northeast High School to pro ball kind of got you ready for whatever large jump, but was that a transition at all for you initially that was tough, or did that go kind of smoothly too?
I think I shortened the gap just by going down and playing travel ball against the best in the country and going to all those perfect game events and PBR, whatever it was, you know, just going to those events and seeing the top guys in the country and kind of just lining myself up with those guys and knowing where I needed to be and what level, you know, of ball I needed to be playing at. And that really helped. And then just getting into pro ball and, you know, being with those guys that first year, that first half year, I think it was a good transition.
Was there a time when you were doing those showcase stuff that, like, you don't know when you're pitching in cold weather states or in the Northeast, wherever, like, well, how am I going to compete against the kid in Southern California who can play outside all year round? Was there a certain point you're like, all right, no, I kind of measure up. I see I belong here.
Yeah, I think part of the thing that helped me was just playing up when I was younger. When I was, you know, 12, 13, 14, my dad was having me play against seniors in high school, and I think, you know, it was always about just trying to play at the best competition I could and never being the best on the field, and that really, you know, gave my level of play a little bit of a jump because seeing those guys and, you know, wanting to be as good as them is, you know, the best thing for me.
All right, so now, you know, you're double A, you're not that far away. Whenever I talk to anybody about you, people talk about spin rates. Mm. When did that first enter your consciousness that, one, that's a good thing, and two, it was something that you actually excel at?
2019, I would say, was really when it happened. We had our tech guy was bringing it up to me, and I had no idea what any of that stuff meant, but he said I had good spin rates, and you know, started to tell me I shouldn't be throwing bottom of the zone. It should be higher in the zone, you know, with the fastball and just things like that. And once I started hearing that stuff and once I started figuring out that spin rates play into what part of the zone you should be throwing the baseball and all that, I really dove in during COVID and just came out of there knowing exactly, you know, everything about myself and what I should be doing with the baseball when I'm on the mound.
Can you,
Is there a danger of going too far, like, into the analytics and, like, worrying about, like, all right, well, my spin rate was down, but you can still get out. So, like, you have to find kind of, like, a balance between just, I'll call it old-fashioned pitching, even though I don't like that term, and you know, and utilizing that stuff?
For sure. I think sometimes you definitely kind of go, you got to go in, you know, so to say, like, stupid. You don't want to think about that stuff. You don't want to be, like, try to be overly smart and then think about it every pitch when you're on the mound. Like, oh, I didn't have the greatest spin direction on that. I think that ball cut a little bit. My vertical break went down. That stuff's going to get to your head for sure. I mean, if I was on a track, man, right before I went into the mound and pitched, that would be almost a little bit of, like, either could put me down or bring me way up. So I think just going into it and just bringing what I got that day is definitely the plan. And old-fashioned pitching, yeah, just going in and just not thinking about
it. So it's more like the prep work. And even you said, like, during COVID, you could really dig in and study and see what works while not trying to compete on the mound.
Right. Well, throughout the week, it's like, you know, those first couple of days is really just recovering and then getting to that bullpen. And when I get to that bullpen, it's like, all right, let's see where we're at. You know, obviously I know what I'm trying to do with the ball. If it's not there, then, you know, those next couple days before the start, it's working on that stuff and just getting it right and, you know, not bringing it back to the mat. You just want to just see ball flight and, you know, assure yourself that you're in the right spot.
Okay, so what I'm going to ask you to do now, because we talk about the spin rates and everything, is just if you could show, we'll do one pitch at a time, just the different grips that you use and you know, maybe how you manipulate to try to impact things like the spin rate and things like that.
Sure.
Tape it horizontally then. Okay. Good.
So we got the four-seam fastball. Really trying to be like a pencil width apart here with the fingers, making sure that thumb lines up in between these two fingers. Just really getting out in front of it and making sure that I'm finishing every pitch and living at the top of the zone. You know, really it's all ball flight with that pitch. If I see it, and I can see it holding lane and holding tunnel and not, you know, dipping or diving, then I know it's in the right spot. So anything really thigh high with that pitch is where I want to be and down for effect.
You're at the point now where you know that if it doesn't have that life that you're looking for, like you're doing something mechanically off that you can adjust on the mound, or is that more the kind of thing you look at in between?
A little bit. I think, you know, when I start to, you know, come off of that stuff, it's really just me pulling off the pitch and I end up having some cut to it, which actually sometimes plays in my favor because it's something different for them that they didn't see. So but just locking it back in and making sure I'm holding the lane and thinking about, you know, staying in a tunnel, essentially, you know, like blacking out everything that's not where I'm driving the pitch to.
Okay, let's move on to the breaking ball, because that's, you know, your curveball people just talk about the probably more so than the fastball, even just the high spin.
So curveball is a spike, but I don't hold it, you know, together. I bring this back a little bit. Thumb is in line, kind of cutting the ball in half with the middle finger there. And then really just thinking about where I'm throwing it. I'm throwing it, if I want a first strike, I'm throwing it to catcher's mask, letting it drop down into the bottom of the zone. If I want it for a strike to ball, it's really just thinking about throwing it to, the catcher's got a Nike sign or an All-Star sign, I'm throwing it to that and getting it to go below the zone.
Okay. Yeah. Do you manipulate it all to try to add and subtract, or is it pretty much the same thing?
It's pretty much the same. Really just bringing up the intent with it is what I was trying to do in the last couple of years, because I was throwing it below 80 miles an hour and now it's above. So I think me just looking at numbers and how curveballs play in the big leagues, ones that are 80 plus are going to play a lot better than ones that are below 80. I mean, unless you're Rich Hill, but it was really just looking at that stuff and seeing what hitters don't like to hit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Anytime you try to compare yourself to Rich Hill, you're in trouble. He's a different animal. All right. And finally, I know one of the biggest points of emphasis for you has been the changeup. How has that been going? And what grip have you settled on for that?
Yeah, I've been pretty confident with it lately. It's been really good. It's like a Vulcan split here. This pointer finger is really just being curled on the side of the ball, and the point of emphasis is the middle finger, just staying through with the middle finger to get that side spin, to get that horizontal grip, so to say.
Now, had you toyed with different grips. I know sometimes it can be hard to, you know, try a circle change, you try this, because I would imagine in high school it's not something you needed a whole heck of a lot.
I did not need it in high school. So changeup's a big feel pitch, and I think that's one thing that, you know, is hard, was hard for me to, that's why it was hard to get a changeup, because curveball I threw my whole life, and I've always had to deal with it, and that was just very natural for me. But getting a changeup was, you know, all about the feel and what, you know, how I can throw it, when I can throw it. Getting to that point was really hard. So once I found the feel for it, then I could start throwing it in different counts and different situations and just building the confidence with it and, you know, working with it on the track, man, and in bullpens.
It's almost sort of, you know, antithetical, like opposite of your other pitches, because you're like, with that, you're killing spin, right?
Yeah.
You know, so like, right. You almost have to change your mindset, and you're trying to have the opposite effect of what your other two really good pitches have done for you.
Right, yeah, absolutely. But that's why I kind of went with the bullpen, because when I didn't really split the fingers in the middle, that's when I actually had a riding changeup, and it was really just a slower fastball. So That was the hardest thing, was getting it to stop riding and stop being a bad fastball and just bring a little bit of, you know, vertical downward shape to it. And once I did that, I mean, it's been a lot of fun since. I mean, been throwing it just as much as the curveball. I think last game it was like 20 and 20 on those two, so it's been fun.
Awesome. Mike, thanks very much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I was just so impressed with his pitching IQ. And, you know, his understanding and sort of embracing of a lot of things that we, you know, talk about, things like spin rate, which he didn't know anything about really in high school, but has come to understand that that's his bread and butter, both with his fastball and his curve. And even the understanding of the grip on the changeup and finding the right one and using that pitch more effectively. So there's a reason why I'm super high on him, and that I feel he's underranked, and we'll move him up when we do our re-rank. But our thanks to Mike Burrows. Looking forward to seeing him throw in the Futures game. We're going to take another break. When we return, we'll talk Futures game, rosters, and of course, our second annual Home Run Derby batting practice unofficial draft. Coming up next on the MLB Pipeline Podcast.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo, the 23rd Major League Baseball All-Star Futures game is on Saturday. You can watch it on Peacock, and it'll also be on MLB Network the following morning, I believe 9 a.m. Eastern. And the rosters have come out since our last podcast. We've been looking forward to these for quite some time. As always, a cavalcade of future stars, of current top 100 prospects. There have been some changes to the rosters. But when they first came out, there were 18 top 100 prospects on the National League side, 13 on the American League side. That's down to 12 now, as Boston's Brian Bayo has been replaced since he's in the big leagues. And then on the National League side, we had a replacement as well. We added Mark Vientos of the Mets, replacing David Villar of the Giants, also up in the big league. So if you're going to miss the Futures game, that's the reason to do it. You don't want to be replaced because you're injured. We have five of the top 10 overall. Is that right?
You would think I would remember that
It's five of 10.
Thank you. Five of the top eight, even if you want to go five of the top eight.
Yep. So Mets catching prospect Francisco Alvarez, who's number two on the recently updated top 100 prospects list. D-backs outfielder Corbin Carroll, number three. Orioles infielder Gunnar Henderson, number five. And Cardinals third base prospect Jordan Walker, number seven. And Yankees shortstop prospect Anthony Volpe, number eight. Those are the highest ranked players on both sides. Guys, quickly, any sort of general impressions about the composition of the rosters? Anyone you're particularly excited to see? And when you look at these rosters, just any one thing that jumps out at you?
I mean, I think... Go ahead, Jim.
I was just going to say, it's loaded as usual. I mean, it's, you know, I don't think there's any other place during the year where you could see this many of baseball's best prospects on the field at one time. You know, we've seen a decent amount of these guys, at least I have. I'm sure you have too, Jonathan, like either now that we went back to spring training, back fields or the fall league. But and last week we kind of tackled this question, so I won't say Yuri Perez again. You guys know I love Yuri Perez. I'm looking forward to seeing Jackson Churio of the Brewers. Like, I don't do our Brewers list, but it's always a pretty good gauge for me when I have scouts or bringing up players to me I'm not asking about telling me how great they are. That gets me excited about seeing. So I'm really looking forward to seeing Jackson Churio there with the Brewers.
That's a good one. I think one sort of thing that jumps out is that there are four top 100 catchers in the National League on the roster. That is kind of insane. And five top 100 catchers. When you add in Shea Langeliers on the American League side, it's kind of impressive, to say the least, that there are that many top catchers. If I'm going to pick out one guy, I just did my beat report on, three guys. But I'm going to mention Taj Bradley, mostly because I got to talk to him at length in spring training in Rays camp, and he just was great to talk to. And he's obviously having as good a year as any pitcher in the minor leagues, based in terms of his numbers. Granted, these guys are going to go an inning at the most. But just seeing him on the stage, be exciting. And I'm kind of hoping that this is going to be one of those instances where they tell Taj not to bother going back to AA and send him to AAA after the Futures game.
I'm going to predict that the National League remains undefeated in Futures game history, last year being the first time that the format changed to National League versus American League. But this team looks absolutely loaded to me. An outfield that will include Corbin Carroll, Jackson Churio, Pete Crow Armstrong, Robert Hassel III, and Zach Veen sounds extremely exciting to me. Ellie De La Cruz has been absolutely fantastic lately. Good chance to get to see him on the big stage. And Jonathan, you mentioned the four top 100 catchers on the roster. I guess the roster composition doesn't always necessarily predict the outcome of the game, but I'm thinking the National League is looking fairly stout this year.
All right.
As for futures game predictions, we did this last year and it was fun. You guys drafted a home run derby squad. There is no official home run derby at the futures game.
Sadly.
Shouldn't
they be able to do that though? At least track it with StatCast. I mean, we should have a home run derby and they should track what everybody does in batting practice with StatCast.
Agreed. Maybe we can. So last year you guys drafted four players each and then we did track their batting practice, which kind of has always served as an unofficial home run derby at the futures game. Do you guys know, without looking, how many of the players from last year's your two teams from last year are in the big leagues now?
Out of eight.
I'm sorry. I thought you meant out of the whole future.
Well, Jason,
game.
You drafted two, but you took a best of the rest, right? Isn't that how that worked? But yeah. So we won't cut that.
Okay, I will say six of the eight.
I'm gonna say the funny thing is I can't remember who my fourth player was, but I'm gonna say all four of my guys are in the big leagues.
You're correct. Julio, yep. Bobby Witt Jr.
Yes.
Torkelson and Riley Green. Torkelson led Jonathan to victory with 10 BP bombs.
Thank you, Spencer.
Julio and Riley each had four. Bobby Witt just had one. Jim's team was Adley Rutschman, Jared Kelnick, Marco Luciano, and Nolan Gorman.
So six of the eight are in the big leagues now.
Yeah. Or well, yeah, exactly.
That's the done.
And seven of eight have been.
That wasn't the question that was asked, sir.
Nope. Yeah, you
got
it right.
He's bending the rules, Jim.
Adley had five, Gorman had three, and Kelnick and Luciano each had one. We're going to do this again. Wonder who had first pick last year.
See, I should get the first pick for finishing last.
Give Jim first pick because he's going to complain.
Plus, you give it to Jonathan all the time anyway. But I think the precedent should be whoever loses.
It's ridiculous. Go ahead. Give you know the squeaky wheel the
order. Well, I finished last. Shouldn't we be picking in reverse order of the 2021 standings?
Last year's standings. Fair enough.
Sure.
Okay, Jim. Pressure's on 1-1 in this year's unofficial futures game, batting practice, home run derby draft.
I do have one quick question before we pick. Not that I have any inside information. What happens? Do we get to replace a guy if he's replaced in the futures game between now and Saturday?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. That seems only fair. I just want to throw that out there. I will take Jordan Walker of the Cardinals as my number one overall choice here. And I'm curious, Jonathan, would you have picked Jordan Walker number one?
Probably. I was on the fence, so you made my decision
That's why I'm here, easier. Chris, trying to make it easier for you.
I appreciate that. I will take Ellie De La Cruz, minor league actually baseball's only 2020 player, number two. And I had a strategy. I didn't mention him as the guy who I was most excited to see because I didn't want to spring that name.
I didn't want to tip you off.
So that worked.
I'm not familiar with Ellie De La Cruz. Who is this guy? What? He's not on this roster. I have either. What? Well, I'm gonna stick National League. I'm going National League again with my third pick, as you did with the third overall pick, as we did with the first two, and I will take Francisco Alvarez of the Mets.
That's a good pick.
I think I just took the two heaviest guys on the National League roster. I took the two.
Jim, drafting by weight.
I'm drafting by weight. Now my strategy has been revealed.
Pound for pound.
Phillies left-hander Eric Miller.
Well, if we go pound, there you go. Kate Cavalli. Don't tell him about Kate Cavalli. Kai Bush also
sneaky,
on my list.
Sneaky good batting practice. You know, I feel like it gets a little more, the field is muddled. I felt like there were like, those three were the best guys, I thought.
Yeah,
and so then it's going to be a question of who you think is going to step up, and is it going to be like a guy with a ton of power or like who hits a lot of homers? Yes, I'm.
You're stalling.
I am totally stalling. Can I take Ellie De La Cruz twice? Jim always picks two players when he's told to pick one.
I think you should go Darren Baker. I'll just pick for you. Taking Darren Baker here in the second round.
Done.
It's like the auto draft.
Yeah, this is the NFL. Your 15 minutes are up, and I'm going to run to the podium with my next pick.
You know what? I'm going to take Robert Hassel III. And you know he's not hit for a ton.
You can have Robert Hassel Senior and Junior also. I'll
thank
throw them
you
in.
Very much. I know the power hasn't shown up, you know, in games as much, but it's in there, and I think he's going to want to put on a show in BP.
This is going to be an all National League unofficial futures game batting practice home run derby.
No, it will not be.
All right, are you going to break the string here?
I am. I'm going to go Jonkenzie Noel of the Cleveland Guardians. Note, I said Guardians, so I will not incur any fines. But the Guardians.
No, in fact, you should get 2 points for every homer he hits because you said the name right.
I'll take 2 points for every home run he hits. And he's having a huge year, so I'm very pleased with my team this year. And it's weird; I did no prep this year, and I'm liking my team very much.
Did you do prep last year?
I think I did a little prep, like it was probably 5 minutes of prep, but yeah, no prep this year. I would have picked Ellie De La Cruz second, also had you not picked him.
Okay,
all right, Jonathan, your penultimate pick.
My penultimate pick.
Penultimate pick.
I thought we were doing four each. Haven't I taken three guys already?
No. Stop here. If you'd like this to be your final pick,
only if you took
I will
Ellie
not stand
De La Cruz
in your way.
That's right. I wanted Ellie De La Cruz twice.
Wow.
All right. Well, so I think I will also go American League, and I am going to take Gunnar Henderson of the Baltimore Orioles.
All right, Jim, your last pick. This is your last pick.
And I'm torn here. I'm torn.
Feel free to stall since that clearly has worked so well for me.
Nah, it's just like I'm going to look up one guy's numbers here and see if I want to make this pick based on numbers.
I got three guys I want are still on the board.
I kind of want my pick back.
I have two guys. I'm torn. You know what? I'm just going to go with the guy who's showing greater power in games this year. I'm going Matt Wallner. I bet you guys didn't necessarily see me going Matt Wallner, but I'm going Matt Wallner here.
Jonathan, do a spit take?
I was a no, I'm mad because when we decided we were going to do this in the back of my head, I hadn't done any prep, and I'm like, Matt Wallner is the guy for a BP, you know, derby kind of thing, and I should have taken him with my third pick. So kudos to you. I think Matt Wallner is
it's the all weight draft. I'm going for
Matt
the hefty
Wallner
dudes.
It might put you over the top. All right, I'm going to go with a replacement. Sort of going along the same lines as you, Jim, in terms of guy who's shown power. So I'm going to take Mark Vientos as my fourth player. 25 homers last year. He's hit for power this year. I think he's going to be a good BP guy.
Yeah.
Okay, so Jason, we want you to reprise what you did last year.
That was one of my guys. That was one of the three guys I had in mind that I wanted. Vientos.
I think I know two of your guys are going to be in my.
I would take Nick Prado.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I would take.
Who did you have last year? Did you have Nick Prado last year?
I think I might have. I think I might have also taken Jason Dominguez because I felt like somebody
should
had to take Jason Dominguez, which I'll do that again.
I had you taking him in my mock.
Going down to the National League here. What if I take Miguel Vargas?
All right.
Is that a surprise pick?
I like it.
You got to take a Dodger. Somebody's got to take a Dodger.
And I'll go with, we can't not be watching Jackson Chourio in BP. So
nice. I'll take him. I like your team first.
I thought you might go Oscar Colas. I was looking for you to go Oscar Colas.
Considered it. Did consider it for sure. All right. Let's wrap up here by answering a question from the mailbag.
Quickly.
We got this from @JBFaz1213 on Twitter, who asks, with the announcement of the Braves Royals trade involving a draft pick, should MLB allow all draft picks to be moved in trades?
In a word, yes.
In more than a word, I'm not against it, but like I don't know that we need to be trading eighth round picks. Like maybe I'd put a limit on the first three rounds.
Okay, fair.
And I think I would probably maybe put a limit on how far into the future you could trade draft picks. So you're not trading like a 2025 first rounder or something. But I just think it creates interest, and anything that could create interest in the draft, I think is good. And I think it would give teams more flexibility in ways to build their team.
Yeah, I know we've talked about this before, I think, but like, I know there's been concern that teams would somehow then, you know, punt the draft or whatever. One, I don't think that would happen. Two, I think you could set up some limitations so a team can't suddenly trade all three of their draft picks if that's what you want to protect against. You could do that fairly easily. But I agree. I think it would be fun. Even if, not that doing mock drafts and for the baseball draft is an easy task, it would make it more challenging, but I welcome the challenge.
For those who don't know, and I think saw some confusion in the baseball world when that draft was made and included a draft pick, the only draft picks that can be traded at this juncture are competitive balance picks, competitive balance round A and round B. And one further limitation is that they can only be traded once. So if you trade for a competitive balance pick, you cannot then turn around and trade that pick. So that's how that works now. All right, everybody, that is going to do it for this week's episode of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Where's my...
Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It got buried with all this other...
So you don't miss an episode. Take it home, Jason.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode. If you're enjoying the show or have any suggestions, leave us a rating and a review. Thanks for listening. See you next week.